Ottawa. Let's spend some time in the Prime Box on TSN 1200. Recapping yesterday and sending you home with everything you need to know about sports. Now with Steve Lloyd, here's Lee Versage.
Well, at about 6 o'clock, I'll tell you that. Welcome to the Drive on TSN 1200. It's no longer like in the Drive Box, whatever that is. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. People are going home. Queensway's busy. Lee Versage, Steve Lloyd, Matt Conisvita here with you until 6 o'clock. Hope you enjoyed Portugal beating Uruguay 2-0. Just waiting for the tonight, Matt Conisvita to point at me. I can now talk again. Welcome to the program. Lots to talk about, obviously, with the Senators. Some NFL talk. And we welcome back Steve Lloyd. Now, I'm interested, Steve, how you've spent the last couple of hours.
The last hour or so, took it upon myself, got supper ready as I was watching the game. Had the game on the whole time in the kitchen, Lee, watching that.
Okay.
And went into the Looney Spoons cookbook, Lee, which I'm just become a master of, really. Okay. And we're having a little Wowie Maui chicken tonight, Lee.
Wowie Maui chicken.
Wowie Maui chicken.
Now, what would be on a Wowie Maui chicken? Sounds like some pineapple and some chicken.
There, you need pineapple tidbits. That's the Wowie Maui part. Okay.
Yeah.
Chopped up carrots and bell peppers, Lee. Rice. We use brown rice. And some chicken breast that you chop up as well. A little soy sauce, Lee. A little minced garlic, Lee. Some vinegar, some ketchup, and some brown sugar. And there you go. And you get to prepare that, and you let it simmer or cook. Usually takes, it says, maybe 45 minutes, Lee. Don't buy that. You got to leave it for well over, just over an hour, just to make sure. And we should be good to go.
Matt Conisvita is showing me pictures of Wowie Maui chicken.
That was
right
way
now.
More information than you were bargaining for.
Nope.
I actually know what I'm. There's not many things I can actually make,
yep.
But that is one of them.
No,
I've got
Steve,
that one down pat.
You've misinterpreted this entirely. Sometimes I'll ask AJ a question, and 15 minutes later, I'll ask, okay, yeah, that was more information than I bargained for, not 90 seconds of.
Well,
like,
if you're
going
to compare me to
meal.
AJ stories, that's come on.
It's a segue into telling people that AJ Jakubek is going to join us. A professional segue right there.
It is.
Sometime before 5. I've not talked to him yet, but again, I trust him.
I texted him a little bit before the game.
Okay.
Because Portugal, Uruguay, I had it on my television screen, saw them, all the Portuguese players and fans singing their anthem. And I was like, you know what? AJ loves Portugal's national anthem.
It goes da 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 da.
Sounds like the Superman theme.
Exactly.
Da 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 da. Like that. It's beautiful.
So I texted him when I saw the anthem. I was like, you better be belting out Portugal's anthem today. Enjoy the match. And he said, no belting, but goosebumps for sure. So he didn't upset any Portuguese fans with his Superman-esque rendition of their national anthem.
I wonder if he will be the same as Ronaldo, who, you know, pretty much looked like he got the goal until video replay was like, no, he celebrated like he got the goal, but he did not score the goal.
Well, the announcers were, you know, celebrating the fact that he set Portugal's record for most goals scored.
Yeah.
Then they saw the replay and started laughing a little bit because, you're not going to get away with that one, Cristiano. Didn't touch it. And it's just funny. I hate comparing sports. It's so different. But in the NHL, so often, you'll see a guy in front of the net, and if it doesn't touch him, he'll go to the ref and he'll say, you know what? It didn't touch me.
He'll point back to the original player.
Yep. Yeah, wasn't me, it was him. Not Cristiano Ronaldo.
No, no, no. If there's even a chance that that's my goal, I am taking that goal.
If it touched some of my perfectly coiffed hair, like, give me the goal. Give it to me.
Portugal through now to the round of 16 with that victory this afternoon. So we'll talk to AJ a little bit about his experiences so far. Gord Wilson will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. I believe, Steve, in the next hour that plane will land as the Sens coming back home from the Western road trip. And we'll have to get set here and try and turn a 2-game win streak into, doesn't have to be a 10-game win streak, but it's got to be a nice little run here in the next few weeks for this team to get back into it. And lots to talk about when it comes to that. Again, for people who didn't hear us earlier on from 1 o'clock until 2, you know, I think a good way to come home by winning the last 2 games, and especially in the fashion that they did last night, very late, but still with the understanding that there is a ton of work to do here. And it seems like if they don't put a nice little streak together in the next few weeks, this team's in for a little bit of trouble over the next little while.
Well, a lot of the feeling at the end of last work week was, what's going to happen next week, right?
Yep.
In terms of, is it possible, let's say it goes really sideways on this Western trip, and it started out that way, and that's why we were having that conversation, but they win the last two. But the I think we asked a couple of different web poll questions, didn't we not? Basically kind of talking about that, piecing that together. Would there be a possible change in terms of behind the bench? Would there be a trade that could be pushed further along and a little more urgent on that front? What else could possibly happen with this team if they came back from that trip and let's say they went 0-4? So they win the last two games. Seems to have taken a bit of the heat off the situation, but I still maintain, I think something's coming here in terms of, I would say at this stage, Lee, a trade. I know we keep saying that, and we've been saying it for months and months and months and months. But now this week, the Alex Formanton deadline, I think, is interesting. And I think that, you know, there would be teams interested in Alex Formanton, despite some perceived uncertainty that could be floating around out there still. And that is 5 o'clock Eastern on Thursday. So I wonder if we could see a move to bring in another player. Because I agree with you. You and I discussed this in the 1 o'clock hour. I don't see a world where he plays in Ottawa. Again, famous last words. Watch me have to eat those words with a contract signing and he plays.
Yeah, but we don't know the answer, so I think it's fine to speculate, right?
Yeah, that's my gut. I think they end up trading Alex Formanton. And if a team is truly interested in acquiring him for this season, well, they got to get him by 5 o'clock and have him under contract by 5 o'clock coming up on Thursday. So I still think I would not be surprised if we saw some sort of movement from the club this week.
Yeah, the problem is, if you do that, are you stretching it? Like, the first instinct I would have, and I have no idea what they would get back, but if Alex Formanton's part of a kicker to another deal to bring in a defenseman, it's like, okay, but now you're 20 games in, and now you're chasing the entire season again. So this defenseman that they bring in, you better have some control over, and you better be pretty sure over the next 2 or 3 years that this is going to be another part of, you know, where you're going. And how hard is that to do? I don't know. I wouldn't want this team to reach because of a deadline that's coming up. Because it feels like they should have done this a month ago if that's the direction they were going to go in. Or they should have done it 2 months ago. They should have done it in the summer. They should have done it at another time. If they're able to pull this off for a defenseman and Alex Formanton is a kicker in the deal, I don't know. It just feels like this could have been done beforehand if it were going to be that easy to do, or you're going to overpay and you're going to have the deal done. Yep. And you're going to go, okay, it seems like a lot to give up when you have 8 wins in 20 games. And look, I've almost come to the realization in the last, you know, few weeks when you go over it like we do, there's a lot of pressure on DJ Smith. There's a lot of pressure on Pierre Dorion to turn this around because people have waited for so long. And they've waited and they've waited. And then it was last year where, okay, you know what? Judge us next year. And then they make the DeBrincat trade. And then they sign Claude Giroux. and then they make the Cam Talbot deal, all deals that I still like here today. As we sit here in late November and the team's struggling, all of those deals I like. But what they didn't do was make sure that their depth was there if they had something go wrong. And they've had something go wrong. They lost their number one center. They lost their number two defenseman for 8 games. They lost their number one defenseman for over a week. And they didn't have the reinforcements to back those up. And everybody was slotted differently. So now you're going to reach when you've won 8 games in 20? Because this is the whole, okay, let's wait. You know, you hear everybody say it, and I'm guilty of it too, but I try not to. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to take a step back. And I'm going to wait for a certain period of time to go by, and then we'll judge. We won't judge after 1 game or 2 games or 3 games. You know, the 11 of 17 was big for me to begin the year. 11 games at home in the first 17, no back-to-backs, not a lot of playoff teams from last year. And now we're 20 games in, right? We're a quarter of the season, American Thanksgiving, all that stuff. And this team's won 8 times, including the last 2, thankfully for them. But what are you going to do? You're going to win 12 or 13 games every 20 games for the rest of the season? I did the math earlier when we had the break. If you go 12-8 for the next 3 20 game segments, you're not making it. You're not making the playoffs. That's not even 90 points. If you go 12-8 for your next 3 20 game segments.
I was talking about that last week on, I forget which day. Flat Circle League.
It's all the same day, Lordy.
Yeah, and it was and I still maintain it. Listen, if you're a fan, and especially the players will not give up hope. If you've got players that give up hope, oh, well, then you don't want them on the team. You never give up hope. And if you're a fan, you're truly a fan of your team, you don't give up hope. You're there. Because you can talk yourself in. There's a lot of season left. But to your point, if you're a fan and you're like, you're dialed in thinking they can turn this thing around, there's too much hockey left, that's true. There's a lot of season left. But don't do the math. Math is not your friend. Don't do it. Don't do what Lee did, okay? Because you're going to start doing the math and look at the percentage, the winning percentage the team has to play at mm-hmm. to maybe make it, to get to like 94 points or something like that. It's not friendly.
No,
it's not.
You're going to have to win like 39 or 40 games or the equivalent of what? Of 80 points. With where they sit right now, you're going to have to, they have 17 points. You're going to have to, what, 95? Okay, so 78 points. Is this team getting 78 points for the rest of the year? And 95 is like a maybe you get in the playoffs. 95 is not a guarantee. Of course, last year it was over 100. But
that's because there are so many have-nots.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not the case this year.
I agree, but where do you think that line's going to be?
I think it's 94 or 95.
94 or 95. Okay, yeah. So they got to get 78 points to be able to get there. And even if you think, okay, they don't have to make the playoffs, but they have to play meaningful games in February and March, if you're going to play meaningful games by the end of February in 3 months, it means your win percentage is going to have to be like 75% coming up to even play meaningful games. And I guess when you talk about a trade and will they do something.
I told you not to do the math.
Right. It just, it's reality though. And with all of the guys that are on the team, you look at, I mean, Jake Sanderson's future looks so bright. Shane Pinto's future looks so bright. Even something like last night, like I think Tim Stutz has had a tough start, but he also got put in a position to be a number one center on the team at 20 years old. And I'm not sure that was fair either. Like, all of these players have almost no NHL experience. And these are the guys that they're relying on to be at the 95 point. It's just not realistic. And I would hate for this team now because they said judge us in the fall, and there's a lot of pressure on Pierre Dorion and DJ Smith to go out now and make a move that really in the long term isn't going to help you. Because I got news for you, as you said, the stats do not bear out that this team is going to be playing a lot of meaningful games in the month of March and into April.
But to that point, and this is what I think they've been trying to do, this type of trade all along, right? We're not talking about bringing in a good defenseman that's a rental, right? So there's never a bad time to make that deal. But those deals aren't falling from the sky right now. There's one guy that's available that everybody keeps talking about, and it's Jake Chychrun. Because he's got two more years after this year. Maybe there is something else out there that doesn't get publicized as much, whatever. But if you, I don't care when you make that deal, Lee, you make that deal. Like, if opportunity knocks and you have a chance to grab a guy that is a legit top four defenseman in the league and not just on your team, you do it.
Oh, for sure. But
you do it.
You better
you
be
do
right.
It. Like, it's, you're not bringing in a rental. This is how it's changed for me. That's always been the perfect world deal, right? I think we all know that. A deal of that nature. But I really thought, as it was starting to grind towards camp, you're like, yeah, they haven't got that guy yet. Should they think about maybe pivoting? Maybe make an offer before the season to the Devils for Severson. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're going to deal him now.
No.
That's an own rental for your Devils, right? The way they're slotted with how strong their right side is. I'm just bringing up a random name, right? We are past that point for this season.
Yes.
We are past the point of getting a guy to help out for this year. I could have been sold that in the preseason or in the first couple weeks of the season. I could have been, right?
Yep.
But now we're past that point. If you're going to bring in a D, it's for a guy that's going to be here. You're not doing the other deal.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So AJ Jakubek just texted and said sooner rather than later. So I said five minutes and let's go.
All right.
We're going to take a quick break. Matt Consvita with your look at traffic and weather, and back with AJ Jakubek from Qatar when we come back on The Drive on TSN 1200.
The Drive continues on TSN 1200.
Up until tonight, Bruno Fernandes had never scored at a World Cup finals. He could make it two, and he has. Slow run up, right-footed, rolls the ball into the left-hand side. Bruno Fernandes at the double, and Portugal are the third side to qualify for the knockout stages.
Right back in it here on The Drive, Lieber Sage, Steve Lloyd, Matt Conisvita. Let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Go to Qatar. AJ Jakubek. AJ, how are you?
Doing well, fellas. Just hanging, waiting for the Metro. And, yeah, it's a bit of a slow walk, but all good. And three games today, so no complaints.
Three games today. Wow. Are you tiring at all? I'm wondering about your stamina here.
Four games in one day was idiotic when I tried that. But three wasn't too bad. I only missed 6 minutes of the Ghana-Korea game after seeing the entirety of Serbia and Cameroon. Got 11 goals from those two matches. And, yeah, a couple tonight in the Portugal win. So it was a good day to kind of brush off what happened last night. Pretty disappointing for Canadian fans, for sure. Just the fact that, I mean, 30 teams still have a chance to win this thing, and two don't. And it's the hosts in Qatar, and it's Canada. But I kind of feel like we're better than 31st or 32nd in this tournament. But two good opponents. We probably deserved at least a draw, if not a win, against Belgium. Didn't deserve anything yesterday. But in the end, we'll see if Canada can get something out of the last game against Morocco and finish on a high, because I think they've merited something from this tournament, even though it shouldn't have been yesterday.
Now it's coming up on what, 12:30 for you, AJ? This is perfect. I was worried. I'm like, you know what? You've always been a bit of a night owl. This is perfect. I'm expecting the best interview you've ever given here over the next 10 minutes or so. Okay.
Yeah, I'll be honest, these 10 o'clock games, I kind of wish that we had earlier games because it's just such a mess, like getting out of stadiums, and they've done a pretty good job with that in terms of logistics. But, you know, I'm coming out of Lusail Stadium with 89,000 other people trying to either get on the metro, a taxi, a bus, or wherever they need to go. So there's no easy way to do that, no matter how you slice it. I think they've done a pretty good job, but some of these games, when you're at 10 o'clock games, and if you don't leave early, and I'm not one to leave early, you know, it can be 2 o'clock or even later when you're getting home. But all good. Still hanging in there. A lot of steps on this trip, a lot of flights on this trip in terms of my walking, and sometimes a little bit of running when you've got back-to-back games. But, all in all, it's been fantastic. We've really enjoyed ourselves here. I think, you know, again, I know I talked to you, Lloydie, with JR last week, and, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed is the fact that this is not just a European and Latin American World Cup. This is a World Cup that, and, you know, on the pitch as well, you've seen African nations do very well. You've seen Asian nations do very well. And you see a lot of different people here from different countries, Morocco, Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Japan, South Korea, all represented really well. Canada's been represented really well here. I would say, you know, there's maybe 8 or 10 countries that have more fans here. And when I say fans, I mean fans from their actual countries traveling here. It's not that there's anything wrong with a bunch of people traveling over here and putting on their Portugal jersey or their Brazil jersey or their Argentina jersey to support a player that they love in Messi or Ronaldo or Neymar or whoever they might love. But in terms of actual Canadians coming here, I would say they're probably top 12 in the tournament in terms of the support. And you could really feel it in the stadium yesterday, especially when Canada scored the goal. So, but it's been great. It's been great to, you know, I'm in an apartment with 5 other guys, and we're right in the middle of a working class neighborhood with, you know, you get there's the call to prayer every morning that we hear. It's a predominantly Muslim neighborhood with a lot of Afghans and Pakistanis and people from Bangladesh and that region. And, you know, we've gotten to know the people, gotten to know the neighborhood, and it's been a real cool and different experience for me as someone that's only traveled to Europe and Latin America in my life. So, it's been a fantastic experience watching the soccer, but also just from a cultural and life experience as well.
Take us through the emotion of the 2 Canada games, if you can, because, boy, the first half against Belgium was one of the most electric things ever until the goal. And, you know, they weren't able to get it back, but it felt like they had a little bit of momentum. Davies scores in the second minute and, you know, the first ever goal, history in the making. And then what happened afterwards? I'm sure you and other Canadian fans, their range of emotion has been tough because there's been some highs and obviously some lows.
Yeah, for sure. And just the excitement of being back for the first time in 36 years and singing the national anthem and everything that goes with that was really, really special. Seeing all the Canadian fans that were there, I mean, badly outnumbered Belgium. I mean, you would hear people cheering on the goal for Belgium when Batshuayi scored. But, I mean, again, they're all there kind of to cheer for De Bruyne. In terms of actual Belgians here, you didn't really see or hear too many of them. So, to see so many Canadians out and about just at games. I mean, when we went to the Germany-Japan game that day, we saw hundreds of Canadians going there that were there for the doubleheader. And so really cool experience that way. I mean, obviously difficult. You think, okay, VAR and then penalty and up steps Alphonso Davies. And I think the first thought of a lot of people who have watched this Canadian team is, why isn't Jonathan David taking the penalty? He's the guy that takes penalties for Lille on a regular basis. So it was a little surprising that they decided on Davies, but it didn't work out. It was one of those things that after the 90 minutes, you felt so proud about the performance, but you knew it was a missed opportunity because we've seen some upsets in this tournament. We saw Japan beat Germany, came back, laid an egg the next game against Costa Rica. We saw Saudi Arabia pull off, you know, one of the biggest upsets in the tournament's history against Argentina, lost the next game against Poland. So it's difficult to kind of, when you're an underdog, and that's what Canada is coming into this tournament, it's difficult to just kind of replicate that performance 2 games in a row against top sides. And so they needed something out of the Belgium game. The emotions of the goal, I mean, fantastic. Like nothing, I probably like nothing I've ever experienced at a sporting event in terms of just the sheer emotion of everyone there seeing Canada make World Cup history for them. But, you know, in the end, you know, they were manhandled. They were outrun and overmanned in midfield. And you know, I think John Herdman got a couple of things wrong. I really like him as a coach, but, you know, probably not a good idea to poke the bear. I mean, Croatia is a team that reached the World Cup final 4 years ago, and they've got so many world-class players. And so I don't think they needed extra motivation, but you don't need to poke the bear like he did. And then, you know, just tactically, you know, they needed another player in midfield to help out Ayoub Stocky, who's clearly not been playing at 100%, and Teba Hutchinson, who, you know, at 39 years old, looked it the other night. So they needed more support, and obviously, you know, Canada was outclassed in the game. So it went from being one of those things where in between games, every time you'd see somebody from another country, they'd talk about how good Canada was and how Canada deserved better from that game against Belgium. But, you know, there was no – haven't heard that today, let's put it this way, when it comes to the loss against Croatia. Better team clearly won. And, you know, here we are with one game left against Morocco to see if, you know, Canada can again make some history with a point or a win, trying to spoil the party for a Moroccan team that's probably been the surprise of the tournament. But they've got some really good players as well. Hakimi, Mesraoui, Ziyech, I mean, these are world-class players. And so this is going to be a tough game. And again, when you look at the Moroccan fans, Canada's had the bulk of the fans for the first two games. They're going to be badly outnumbered this last game against Morocco. So it's going to be a hostile environment, and we'll see if they can, you know, make some history for Canadian men's soccer.
I want to go back to Herdman. That's where I was going to go next, AJ. I don't know how you feel about it, but yeah, maybe not a good idea to poke the bear. But to me, that's not that big a deal. I really think that, you know, the real criticism, because no two ways about it, it is disappointing to lose to a very good side, but it feels disappointing right now. There's so much energy around the group. Hopefully they can get a win against Morocco and they can go into the next World Cup with their first goal and their first win. That'd be nice. But to me, it's tactically starting with, and I know the players kind of decide that, but why do they decide that? Davies taking the penalty. There was talk about that in the first game. And then tactically, the decision to stick with certain players, and also formations as well. It just seems to me, if we want to be critical, and everybody's critical when there's disappointment, like John Herdman's, he's been great for this program, great for a women's program. This isn't a whole body of work criticism. This is just like nitpicking what we've just seen here. But to me, the whole, you know, F Croatia thing, I really don't care about that. I think if you really get down to it, it's some critical tactical errors that were made here. And maybe it doesn't make a difference, but you know what? I think it's fair to point that out. Where do you come out on it?
Yeah, well, I think it's a little too much hubris on both accounts, right? And I appreciate that, right? I think that's how he's carried himself throughout CONCACAF, and Canada's fed off that. But this is just a different level. And so whether it's speaking his mind like that so freely, or whether it's tactically, you know, going with too many attacking players because you're going to go on the front foot and you want to take the game to Croatia, well, sometimes you need to kind of take a step back. And so I think it's a little too much hubris on both accounts. And, you know, I think he was humbled a little bit on both accounts. So, yeah, we'll see. I'd like to see, you know, a couple of changes. Certainly Sam Adekubi is a player that I'd like to see on the left side, you know, playing the next match. Maybe go a flat back four where Alistair Johnston's on the right, and then, you know, some more players in midfield. We'll see how Ayoub Stocky is, if he's even good to go. You know, I think Kone deserves a start. I thought he was really good in the second half. And a player at 20 years old, you know, we're going to see him playing in Europe. You know, I don't know exactly where, but alongside the likes of the Davies, the Buchanans, the Larens, the Davids, all those types of players that have made the move. Alistair Johnston now, it's only a matter of time before he moves into that spot. So I'd love to see him get a start because I think he's one of our most talented players and at 20 years old, a real breakout star in the making for this Canadian program. But definitely they need more help in midfield. And you know, you can't just think you're going to take it to everybody. This isn't Costa Rica. It's not even the United States and Mexico. Belgium and Croatia is a different level, and certainly Canada was exposed, you know, for going for it a little too much in that last game.
All right, so away from Canada, what is it that you're watching? And certainly tomorrow, tensions might be high with the U.S. and Iran, with a game that the U.S. absolutely has to win. And we all remember what happened in 1998.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one for sure. I mean, I'm curious to see what happens with CONCACAF. CONCACAF's been poor. I mean, that's one of the things that's frustrating. Again, we were at Japan, Costa Rica, and Costa Rica has looked terrible in this tournament. And clearly, Canada's a better team than Costa Rica, but they found a way to grind out a win, and they're hanging in there. So, yeah, I mean, what's going to happen with the CONCACAF nations? I don't expect Costa Rica to pull another chalk. I would think they're going to lose to Germany. Mexico's got a long road to go. They're going to have to beat Saudi Arabia, and they'll need help. And then you got the United States with, you know, they've got destiny in their own hands if they pick up the victory. But again, they look very average against Wales, especially in the second half. They were poor against Wales in the second half. Did well to get a point against England, but is this team good enough? I mean, Iran, it's going to be a pro-Iran crowd. We saw that at the Wales game. And I don't, like, they're a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde situation. I mean, we went to that game. One of our roommates is Iranian-Canadian, and I know a lot was made of what happened at the game back home, but, you know, you had people there booing the team. You had people there supporting the team. It was a bit of a strange situation. I don't think the players knew what to do with themselves the first game, and they got hammered 6-2 by England because of it, but they certainly looked focused the last game against Wales. So if the same Iran team shows up against the United States, then they're going to be a real handful because they're one of the best teams in Asia for sure. So, yeah, we'll see how CONCACAF does. We'll see, you know, there's some teams on the ropes like Argentina and Germany. We'll see how they handle things. And, yeah, I mean, beyond that, just seeing if Canada can finish on a high note going into that last game against Morocco.
Well, it's nice to be able to talk to you, my friend, and it sounds like you're having the time of your life. So continue to enjoy it, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you soon.
Yeah, looking forward to it. 13 days away. I'm actually kind of looking forward to coming home. I've seen 19 games already. I got 13 more to go. But, yeah, pretty incredible experience. Every game is pretty special to be able to go to. It doesn't matter if you're that's one of the things I've kind of realized. Some of the games that I thought would be amazing games have turned out to be just okay. And then, you know, like today, Cameroon, Serbia, Ghana, South Korea, Wales, Iran early in the tournament. You just never know what you're going to get, no matter who's playing. So it's been, yeah, for sure. From a sporting perspective, definitely one of the big, you know, this was number one on my bucket list for a long time. But, yeah, missing home a little bit. Look forward to some Sens hockey and some junior hockey in a couple of weeks. And but in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy every minute I'm here.
All right, thanks, AJ. Nice to be able to talk to you. We'll talk to you soon. There goes AJ Jakubek. On the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. I think in his message there, Steve, what you heard was, Lee, I miss you. Matt, I miss you.
And I love you.
Yeah. Like, I miss you, Lee, and Matt way more than I thought I would when I left. That's what I heard. I don't know about you.
I heard a bit of a tired man.
Yeah. I agree.
As he was, as you know, you and Maddie were on the front lines of his excitement for the last month leading up to his departure. It was all that was on his mind.
Sometimes
right?
You can build yourself up so much that
yep.
That lag and, afterwards.
Yeah, and he was so jacked to go, and he's still jacked, don't get me wrong. But the level of everything that he is subjected himself to, like he is squeezing in so much. To do four, to do three a day is a lot. He did four in the one day, and he's doing three a days. And for people that don't know, AJ just didn't go there. He went to Bulgaria, and he went to Belgium.
France,
where else did he go?
London.
Flew from Athens, went to Greece, and that was the final. And so he's was touring around and doing a lot and seeing a lot, and that's it is a trip of a lifetime. But you could hear at the end, he's like, "Yeah, I'm looking forward to coming home." And any of us gonna, if you've ever been on a long trip of any sort, no matter how much you're enjoying yourself on said trip, you got some moments in the middle of it. It's like, yeah, you know what? If I could just sleep in my own bed tonight, it'd be good.
Exactly.
But he's having a blast, obviously. So,
all right. So we'll talk some sense when we come back. Some text messages coming in at 12-1200. I got some more math for you, Steve. That involves some other teams. We'll talk some NFL. I know you want to talk about your Buffalo Bills and their playoff or Super Bowl chances. And before six, you know who we're going to hear from? One of the best five players in the NHL. Jack Hughes. He's a beauty.
Oh, jeez.
Did you see his interview on the weekend? Oh, he's a beauty.
Anyway, in 5 years, Jack Hughes will be a top five player in the NHL.
And now he's already like top five interview, and he's on his way to being top five. So,
top five, eh?
Yep. Look forward to that. Okay. Natural hat trick. Sure. Four goals on the weekend.
Yep. Great player.
Yep.
Top five?
Yep. You heard it right. You heard it right, Steve. And after you hear his interview, you'll be, he had a beauty this weekend. So we'll hear from Jack Hughes as well before 6 o'clock on The Drive on TSN 1200.
Let's get back to The Drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lever Sage, Steve Lloyd, Matt Conazvita. Gord Wilson going to join us, hopefully, in the next hour. Never know with Conazvita exactly what you're going to get. We were talking about the Sens earlier, Steve, and the math that was needed to be able to do something here. Just before the season, we did some of our, playoff predictions, and there were teams that I think Matt and AJ and I agreed on, and then there were, a few of the outliers that we disagreed on, whether they were, 7-8 or 9-10 somewhere in that vicinity. But I've just been amazed as to what has happened here with a couple of the teams. And, a team that I know a lot of people thought, the Boston Bruins, that, whether they would get Marchand back and McAvoy back and how would they hang on. And they're probably a team that, that we couldn't decide whether they were going to be in the playoffs or not. I mean, I had them in the playoffs. The other guys didn't, but it wasn't like I knew the Bruins were going to be the top of the class in the National Hockey League. I just totaled up four teams here and their record so far. Boston, New Jersey, Detroit, and Seattle. Not exactly teams that we thought were going to be in the playoffs. Like, you might have thought Boston would be, but I don't know that anybody would have had Detroit, Seattle, or Jersey in the playoffs. Those teams have played 84 times so far this year. Just those four teams. 17 losses in regulation. In 84 games, 17. Seattle, Boston, Detroit, and New Jersey. That's not exactly what we thought. And why it's going to be so hard. You're talking about in 80% of those teams' games combined, 80, they are picking up a point. And most times two. So if you want to ask yourself why it's going to be hard to get back into it, from the Ottawa Senators' point of view, that would be why. Would you be willing to change your mind on where this team should be this year, now that you've seen the start? Steve?
What do you mean by that? Like, change my mind.
Would you be okay with not playing meaningful games or making the playoffs?
Oh, okay, I see what you're doing.
If you felt like they were still going in a really good, positive direction.
Can you sell this to the fans is what you're asking. If you're a hardcore Ottawa Senators fan and you thought that maybe you had visions of grandeur. I'm not going to tell you how to be a fan.
Yep.
But I think even most fans would, you know what? Let's just not be dead in the water at the trade deadline, and it's all about selling. Let's at least have the pilot light on of so you're saying there's a chance, because they haven't even been that close for the last number of years. But can you pivot to Tankathon Bedard talk for another 4 months is what you're asking the fans.
Yep.
Can you accept that? Can you change your expectation level to where this team is, like, if they can just be competitive from here on out? And I think they could be. I think for the what's remaining in this schedule, I think that they can play at a better pace than they have the first 20 or so games.
Sure.
I do believe that. But I also know the math. Playing pretty well and being a good team between now and then doesn't get you in.
No.
It doesn't.
You
got
to be a great team.
Yeah. You got to be a great team the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. You can't be a good team. You have to be a great team to get in the rest of the way. So the question is, you're not asking me, Lee. You're asking the fans. Are you okay with recalibrating? Or are you pissed? either way. Has that kind of ship sailed for you and how angry you are with the start of the season?
And certainly the ownership and where that is going might, I don't want to say cloud judgment, but might factor into people's judgments in the future. It's something that we didn't necessarily know was going to happen. When we hear reports of 20 interested buyers and the team is officially going to be up for sale and it has to remain in Ottawa, when we were talking at the end of last year, all of that was not going on. So maybe that changes as well, your mindset. But yes, that's the question. Would you be okay with it?
12-1200, let us know. Are you okay with being good the rest of the way after a brutal start, or are you still going to be mad no matter what? That's the question.
Do you think having no back-to-backs have hurt the Sens more than helped them? I wonder, being a young team, if they needed more of them to mentally be able to get over their losses quickly. From Mike.
I can't get there.
No.
I'm not going full Guy Boucher on you, Mike, but not playing back-to-backs is beneficial. It's never a good thing. The only time that's ever brought up is when you've played poorly in the front end and the post-game interview question is, so is it good to get back on the horse right away? Absolutely. Absolutely, it's good to get back on the horse right away, because if we had to practice tomorrow, coach would not be happy with us. Good thing we're playing.
Right. Interpreted properly there. Yeah. I understand what you're saying, but I think, Mike, you're reaching. I think you're reaching for, I mean, they beat Boston, right? Boston's lost three times all year. Well, Boston played the night before, came in, their goalie sucked, and Ottawa beat them 7-5. They beat Buffalo when Buffalo had to travel. I don't know that playing back-to-backs and traveling is the best scenario for any team at any point. But I think you're just reaching for some reason why they have not played all that well so far. Okay,
hang on real quick. This is what, I guess, it came to me. This is what Mike's thinking. He's looking at the rest of the week.
Yeah.
You sweep the home and home against the Rangers, and then you beat Carlson Saturday night.
Yeah.
And you've won five in a row,
okay,
right, Mike? There you go. That's how you fan right there. You never give up hope.
Yeah, you basically win every game you have in front of you. That's good.
Duh. Come on.
Yeah.
You play to win the games.
Yeah.
Herm Edwards. Hello?
Hello? Yeah. I wonder what Herm's doing these days. Not coaching Arizona State, I know that.
No, didn't end well there. No.
We will come back for another hour of The Drive on TSN 1200.
You play to win the game.